This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Many of you know me. I am Victory Unlimited, and this is the Victory Unlimited show, the only show that's all about giving you strategies that you can use to make it to the top, as opposed to falling by the wayside. Around here, we aim to make a difference in a world of indifference by any means necessary. Today, we got an email from... No, wait a minute. No emails today. Let's do calls. Do we have a voicemail?
We're on a mission.
Victory Unlimited.
We're on a mission.
Hey, this is Tyler. I'm 39 and I'm from Seattle, Washington. Good show, man. I know you're not a psychiatrist, a doctor, or a preacher, but I'm calling in anyway. I'm a Christian, but times are getting rough out here. It's hard out here, even for us believers. I just got word the other day that our company has just been bought out, and I might be losing my job before the end of the year. Nothing's set in stone yet, but I'm not gonna lie. This has got me worried, and all I've been thinking about is, what am I gonna do? Because I've been there for almost 20 years. And if they do lay me off, what'll happen to my life, my relationship with my wife, and how will I find another job that pays as good as this one? I mean, I need some real help here. How do I stop worrying all the time?
Tyler, to be forewarned should be to be forearmed, not forearmed. As the Bible says, the things you're going through are things that are common to man. And I would add that, unfortunately, it's too common to too many of us men and women. Okay, troops, on this show today, there will be biblical references. There will be scriptural quotes and spiritual concepts that we're going to go into, along with some very practical strategies. So if any of that is going to offend some of you, I'd advise you to run away screaming now, because we're about to go deep on this one. And if you can't take it, then you better fall back now, because I can guarantee you that it's going to cause some weeping and gnashing of teeth, which, by the way, I will be offering absolutely no apologies for. So to everybody else, pull your pants up and put your big boy shoes on and cover me, because we're going in. Tyler, you're a Christian, so I can go a little deeper than I usually get a chance to go with some of these questions that I get. And you're also right. I ain't your pastor, but I am going to take you to church like a Sunday school bus driver. Since you're a Christian, I could talk to you like a Christian. So let's talk about worry. You said that you spend a lot of time worrying, even though you're a believer. Well, I'll tell you right now, either worry or pray, but don't do both. As believers, we should only do one or the other. Which reminds me of a joke, really. a joke I heard a little while ago. There was this pastor who was having a bunch of problems and a bunch of troubles in his church. So he tried everything he could to fix them, but nothing was working. So he called up an old friend of his who was also a pastor of another church. So the next day, they decided to meet up. And after the first pastor told the second pastor everything that was going wrong, that second pastor just looked him straight in the eye and he said, "You know, since you've tried everything else, I think what we're going to have to do now is pray about it." Then the first pastor, he just sat there. You know, he sat there real quiet for a few seconds. And then he finally looked back at the second pastor and said, "My God, man, do you think it's come to that?" I trust that the irony is not lost on you. Okay, anyway, Tyler, like I said, either pray or worry, but don't do both. In fact, I suspect that you already know that. Praying is probably one of the first things that you ought to do. Worrying, by the way, is what your enemies want you to do, soldier. And yeah, I said enemies, plural. Who are your enemies? Well, before I get into that, let's define the term worry right quick. Worry, of course, is an action word. It's a verb. It's something that you do. In general, it can mean a number of different things. It can mean to torment or to torture yourself by repeatedly thinking about negative things, living in fear. To worry is to suffer from an onslaught of emotionally disturbing thoughts. To worry means to be harassed mentally and emotionally. To worry means to be seized, to be grabbed by the throat, as if by something with teeth, and to be shaken and chewed on, much like what a ferocious lion does to its prey. Now, how's that for a word picture for you? In other words, worry is when fearful, negative thoughts have you in a chokehold and won't let go. In essence, understand that worry chokes and strangles us. It cuts us off from peace of mind. It depletes our energy supply and steals our joy of just being alive in general. Worry is what happens when we accept the thought of a negative possibility from the enemy as an inescapable fact. And then we hold on to that thought and we begin to entertain it over and over again. Once we do that, then anxiety starts to creep in, which is nothing but a subtle, lingering, low-level form of fear, which is, by the way, the driving spiritual force behind worry in the first place. You see, this is usually how worry begins. Something happens, or we think that something is gonna happen. Then we start meditating on many possible scenarios. Then, suddenly, the enemy drops a negative scenario in your mind, a scenario that I like to call the negative what-if scenario. And this is where the real mental, emotional, and spiritual battle begins. You see, rather than focusing on the positive what-ifs and meditating on those, what happens a lot of times is that we choose the negative what-ifs, agree with them, and then spend most of our time meditating on those instead. Now, where do these negative thoughts come from? From your enemies, of course, like I alluded to a little earlier. Yes, in life, you have enemies. And as a Christian, you should already know that you actually have three. I know that it looks like that there's a lot more than that, but I can pretty much assure you that all the opposition that you will face will come from out of one of all three of these three camps. Those three enemies are the world, the flesh, and the devil. This world that I speak of is defined as a system, an organized way of thinking that's considered quote-unquote normal to society at large. This flesh that I speak of is defined as that same systemic, organized way of thinking that's happening all around you. Again, mostly negative and limiting, except that this time what I'm talking about is the fact that it's what's happening to you internally. You've internalized this same way of thinking, so much so that now you unconsciously follow this way of thinking without question. And the devil? Well, this This devil that I speak of is a fallen, corrupt, negative, and downright malevolent force that's been at work in the minds and hearts of human beings since the beginning. Now, whether you're someone who believes in the existence of a literal devil or a metaphorical one, one thing that's usually not up for debate among Christians is the belief in the literal existence of evil in and of itself. Regardless of what you believe specifically, understand that one or all of these three enemies are responsible for the attack of worry that you've been going through. Again, I must remind you that one of the basic tenets of fundamental Christianity is the belief that mankind as a whole is in a fallen state and has an internal bent towards the negative. And partial evidence of this is this comfortability and acceptability that we as human beings seem to have with pessimism. This affinity for nihilism that seems to come more natural to us than anything else. In general, we don't have to be taught to be negative. We have to instead unlearn negativity and then be taught to be positive. That's what the whole verse in Romans chapter 12 is all about. You know, the one that talks about how changing our minds from negative to positive is usually a process. Basically, it says, don't be conformed to this world, this current negative or unproductive way of thinking, but be transformed, changed by the entire renewing of your mind, by adopting new ideals and new attitudes, so that you may prove for yourself what God's good and acceptable will for you and your life is. You hear what I'm saying to you? I mean, think about it. When was the last time that you had to tell somebody, hey, you ought to be more negative? Or why don't you cheer down and stop having so much fun all the damn time? Or better yet, when was the last time you heard somebody ask you, why are you always looking for the silver lining? Forget looking on the bright side. Why don't you try looking on the dark side? Yeah, when was the last time you heard somebody say any of the things that I just said? Well, if you're like most people, you probably have never heard anybody say anything quite as ridiculous as any of that. In other words, what I'm trying to say here is that most human beings that I know seem to have a bent toward thinking badly. But for most people who think like that and actually like to think like that, to them, there's probably nothing that makes them so mad than to meet some cheerful, joyful woman. And there's probably nothing that makes them so sad than to meet some glad, happy man. Strange, isn't it? But back to worry. Recognize that we get brand new opportunities to worry every time we wake up in the morning. We get tempted to worry about our jobs, our health, our loved ones, our girlfriends, our wives, our children, and the list just could go on and on. But what I want to do is slam the brakes on all of that by asking you one simple question about all the bad things that you've been worrying about. And that question is, what if they don't happen? What if you don't lose your job, but instead wind up getting a promotion? It may sound crazy, but stranger things than that have happened before in situations like yours. If none of those things you're worrying about ever happen, then you know what you will have done? You will have let fear about tomorrow stop you from enjoying anything and everything about your life today. And I'm telling you that you can't let yourself go out like that. Fear is a dangerous thing. It's actually a weapon that can be used against you, or worse, you can be tricked into using it against yourself through excessive worry. Living with all that anxiety can create a stronghold of perpetual fear in your life, and is usually built by turning negative thoughts over and over again in your mind. Then, if you do it enough times, these negative scenarios start becoming more elaborate every time you think about them, until you forget all about your faith as a Christian. You stop believing you, God, and God working through you and other people can do something about your situation. Instead, you start only asking yourself, what am I going to do? You do that enough times, and then you get overwhelmed because you start seeing the problem as bigger than you and God. You see, that's how fear works. is designed to rattle your emotions and throw you off the path of courage, confidence, and peace. And you can leave yourself open to it whenever you choose to believe more in the power of negative outcomes than positive ones. And when I say choose to believe it, that's exactly what I meant, because it is a choice. The more you turn those negative images, thoughts, feelings, and scenarios over and over in your mind, what you're doing is actually aiming your faith in the wrong direction. By the way, one good way to know when you're losing the fight of faith is when you realize that you have more trouble believing that the best thing will happen instead of the worst. But enough about how to recognize when you're losing the faith fight. Let's talk about how you win it. Here are five weapons that you can use to win the war against worry. Number one, when you're tempted to worry, remember who you are. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world, remember? You're a child of God whom the scriptural text says is loved with an everlasting love, a perfect love, a mature love, that once you're able to accept that and believe in it enough, is capable of casting out fear. A spiritual power has been given to you that has the ability to make you more than a conqueror in any situation. I mean, think about it. Think about it just for a second. What the heck is more than a conqueror? Well, that's probably a little too deep to get into right now. But the bottom line of it is that all you need to do is remember that you have a power in you that's greater than you realize, no matter what it looks like to you right now. As a Christian, remembering who you are also means remembering that everything that you can detect with your five senses is not your main source. It's only your resource. Jesus himself said, worry can't even accomplish even little things, so we shouldn't do it. Having a correct self-image, a correct view of the world and your correct place in it as a Christian can help you stand your ground rather than immediately losing it as a reaction to fear and then followed up by an onslaught of worry. Knowing who you are and whose you are in the middle of a crisis can make all the difference between you getting knocked on the ground and staying there and you standing your ground and snatching victory out of the jaws of what you think looks like defeat. Number two, when you're tempted to worry, emotionally withdraw from the situation and look at it objectively. If possible, use the shock of the situation itself to purposely have an out-of-body experience. Now, don't get it twisted. I'm not talking about literally having an out-of-body experience here. I'm talking about figuratively having one. We've all had those experiences in our lives where something has happened to us or we've gotten some news that's so disturbing initially that it seems surreal to us, like it ain't even happening to us, like it's happening to somebody else. A lot of times when we experience a shocking event, what we really need is for somebody to tell us or for us to tell ourselves to snap out of it before we cross that line over into anxiety, worry, or fear. Because once we do that, we may actually miss out on a potentially good thing because we interpret it immediately as a potential bad thing first. Sometimes when you're too paralyzed by fear, you'll fail to make that big power move that's necessary during that time to turn that crisis situation into an opportunity. In the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, you see examples all the time about how angels who would visit people would have to do something immediately to help those same people regain their proper emotional equilibrium before they could even deliver their messages to them. And right in line with what we're talking about today, you know what was usually the first thing that the angels said to those people when they appeared? Most of the time, the first thing they said was, "Fear not." I believe we can learn a lot from that today. Because the first thing that we should remember to do whenever something big, blinding, alarming, or life-changing happens to us is to fear not. Everybody out there listening to the show today, think back over your life. Think back about all those alarming things that have happened to you. Notice how many of those things that seemed to be bad news for you at first actually turned out to be good news for you as they unfolded. You see, another reason why the angels always told the person they appeared to fear not was because what they were announcing to those people was not news of a crisis, but news of an opportunity. and opportunities many times require for us to stay in faith to receive them. Fear can nullify or sometimes even dismantle the works of faith. So with that being the case, the opposite is also true. Faith can magnify and help manifest the good things that come into our lives, even when the opportunities that arise don't actually look like opportunities when they first appear. I understand that sometimes there are certain things in life that happen to us do warrant our immediate concern, but not all things. Many things we worry about turn out to be false alarms. But the thing about false alarms is that when they go off, they can be just as disturbing as the real thing. This is when your rational mind has to be trained to take over. Or better yet, here's when your spiritual mind should be allowed to supersede and or to subdue your raw emotional responses. Why? Because otherwise you'll fall into fear and then get caught up in that cycle of worry. And that's exactly what we don't want. Fear pressures you into believing what you don't want to happen will happen, but faith inspires you to believe that what you do want to happen will happen. One is oppressive, the other is liberating. Faith moves you, but fear just stops you dead in your tracks, makes you an easy prey for your enemies. Remember that definition of worry that I mentioned earlier, that they referred to it as being attacked repeatedly, like by a lion? Well, as you know, the Bible itself describes it the same way. What is it? 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. It warns Christians about this by saying something like, "Be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is like a roaring lion prowling around to see who he can devour." Or if you want to paraphrase it in the Victory Unlimited show style, you can say it this way: keep your eyes open and keep your hand on your gun, because the enemies to your personal well-being can pop up at any time and toss a negative thought grenade at your peace of mind. No matter how you say it, the meaning stays the same. Watch out for anything that's trying to attack you by scaring you first. Now that I think about it, let me tell you something interesting about lions and how they hunt right quick. Did you know that lions have different roars that they use for different purposes? Lions roar to communicate with each other. They roar to mark their territory, and they roar for other reasons too. Well, one of those other reasons why they roar is because it's a strategy that they use to catch prey. You see, what they do is creep up on their prey. And when they get just close enough, they'll let out a roar to scare their prey. What's even more interesting than that is that sometimes lions will actually roar to the ground to amplify the sound of their roar and make it echo in all directions. You see, that way their prey get confused, can't think, and then make moves in the wrong direction out of fear, because they don't know where that roar is coming from. And what happens then, of course, is they get trapped and caught by the lion. And then the mauling begins, or in our case, the worrying begins. But back up a minute. Notice something about that scripture that I quoted. It didn't say that your enemy was a lion, but that he was like a lion. The take-home message is that even though a lion can roar loud as hell, when you look into his mouth, sometimes he's old and toothless. You feel me? Sometimes, if we're not careful, we can work ourselves up into a state of anxiety over nothing, or something that in the end turns out to be nothing. And when we do that, all we're really doing is letting worry stop us from living long before the day we actually die. What we have to do in a situation like this is emotionally withdraw from it, objectively look at it, and then prepare to go to war. If we're going to overcome worry, we have to take out fear first. Better to come out fighting than to go out whimpering from day one of the crisis, all the way up until the day where that thing that we're tempted to worry about actually happens. If it happens, better to live now. Better to enjoy the good things in your life today. If you're gonna die, only die once. Don't die every day. Die another day. Or, to paraphrase Shakespeare, a coward dies 1,000 deaths. A brave man, only one. Number 3. When you're tempted to worry, declare spiritual war on the crisis. And when I say spiritual war, I mean wage warfare on every non-physical front that you can. Recognize that the main battlefield is in your mind, your way of thinking, remember? Since you're a Christian, you know that all-out war should involve praying, speaking the word, positive words, remembering and reliving all the crises that your faith has successfully brought you through in the past. And last but not least, making a daily and nightly habit of casting your cares, your worries off of you while you're simultaneously meditating on the things that you really want to happen in your life. This is all about protecting your perimeter, Christian soldier. This is all about you becoming your own watchman on the wall. Stand guard over what enters your mind and your spirit through your eyes and your ears. If watching the news fills you with anxiety about some particular things that you're going through right now in your life, here's an idea. Turn off the TV. You also might want to limit reading, listening to, and watching anything that's going to bring you down rather than pick you up. Don't take in anything that you already know is going to upset you or make you anxious, especially right before you go to sleep. There are all kinds of things that you can do to help you get better control over how you respond to things emotionally. If you already have the battle plan, then you already know about things like the chain link method and the mind over matter method. But as an alternative, if you don't have the battle plan, just go to Google or YouTube and type in the phrase faster EFT, and all kinds of helpful videos will come up. Also, what you can do is use the power of your words to interrupt that vicious cycle of worry. Anything you focus on, you magnify. Anything you meditate on grows. Remember, as a man thinks, so is he. Our thoughts are what make us who we are. Our thoughts are controlled by, or are at the very least influenced by, what we hear and see. At the end of the day, most of what we hear doesn't actually come from what other people say. It comes from what we say to ourselves, either in agreement or in disagreement to what we've heard. So in a sense, words are containers of thoughts. And thoughts are pictures that we see in our minds. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. As such, it's no wonder that words can be like weapons. Weapons that can be used against you. Or weapons that you can use to your own benefit or to the benefit of somebody else. And because of this, we can choose to either use the words we say to nullify the effects of negative thoughts that try to invade our minds by overcoming them with positive ones. Or we can use our words to agree with and amplify those same negative thoughts. The choice is ours. A good way to interrupt the negative thoughts that flow through your mind is by speaking the word, positive words, out loud the moment that that negative thought occurs. If we can manage to do this consistently enough, it'll be damn near impossible for negative thoughts to take root and create a cycle of worry in our minds. Number 4, when you're tempted to worry, work out instead. Convert that mental energy that you'd ordinarily be using to worry to exercise instead. You've heard that old quote that says, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger." Well, we all know that if you take that to an extreme, it's ridiculous. But what I'm talking about here is finding ways to actually use that concept to your benefit. Exercising your body, getting in shape, or staying fit is a good way to beat back the physical attacks of fear, anxiety, and the tendency to worry. Now, consult your doctor first, but afterwards, I'm here to tell you that it really doesn't matter what you do, as long as it's distracting enough and strenuous enough to take your mind off your problems and release some endorphins into your system. Jogging, swimming, boxing, lifting weights, doing aerobics, or whatever, it's up to you to choose your weapon in this war against worry. Really, what you should be aiming to do here is to make a mental and emotional association between worrying and working out, so much so that it becomes an instinctive reflex for you. When you feel yourself start to worry, do something physical, like drop down and bust out about 20 push-ups. It might sound silly, but this will definitely help you get a positive benefit from a negative stimulus. Now, I understand that you might not always be in a position to use this particular strategy, especially like if you're at work. That is, unless you're a football coach or if you work at a gym or something. Then it wouldn't be such a big deal for people to see you drop down and knock out 20 push-ups or something at random times throughout the day. But if you work in a white-collar, corporate-type environment, then it might look kind of strange if you dropped out of sight on a video conference call or if you dropped down in a big boardroom to give yourself 20. So I guess what I'm saying here is that using your discretion and common sense is advised. Number 5, when you're tempted to worry, come up with an action plan to solve the problem instead. Gather information from people you trust ASAP. Consult with the people you know and people you don't know who can help you. If someone or some group of someones has experience with overcoming the issues that you're dealing with right now, then don't hesitate to align yourself with them. This is a war, remember. You can use all the allies you can get, and that includes making strategic allies with people who are there at their company working with you right now. You never know. Your current job, your next promotion, your next job tomorrow could come from a good connection that you make today. So get on it. That's right. Team up. Work with other people to gather as much intel as you can to develop an action plan, then carry it out. In your case, it would be things like getting your resume together and start applying for other jobs. Not necessarily to leave where you're working now immediately, but just to put out some feelers to see what's out there. And don't stop there. Enlist the aid of friends, relatives, friends of friends, and even professional services to help you discover where some other good employment opportunities are. And again, still don't stop there. Do some research. If you have a business idea that you've been sitting on, if you have an idea on how to generate some alternative income that you've never acted on, see if this is a good time for you to make that bold move. Count the cost first, then see if you can actually afford to do it now. See if this is the right time for you to take that leap of faith. Faith moves you to work. As we all know, faith without works is dead. Now do you see how worry, meditating on what you don't want to happen, can nullify your faith and even kill it? Like I said, faith without works is dead, but your works can take on many different forms. Sometimes what you work should be the tongue in your mouth, speaking positive, praying, and having conversations with people who can help you, people who can be your allies against whatever you're facing right now. Or sometimes what you work can simply be the tongue in your shoe. Actually getting up and doing things, making moves, and putting a plan into action. But better yet, the best thing to do would probably be for you to do both. Work the tongue in your mouth and the tongue in your shoe. Now, none of us are immune to an attack of fear that will tempt us to worry. It's part of our human condition. But as a Christian, you have to remember to stand on the promise that says, no weapon formed against you will prosper. And keep standing until, like Popeye says, until you can stands no more. And after that, guess what? You still have to keep standing. I know. Sometimes you can get hit and you can develop some chinks, some holes in your body armor. And that's understandable. We're all human. And that's understandable. But guess what? That's what all your friends, allies, and all the other people in your life are there for, to hold you up and to help patch you up so that you can all move forward together, and to expand that so that we can all move forward together. And know that this show is not meant to replace that kind of help or any kind of professional help that you may need right now. And this show, in no way, is meant to marginalize or minimize the magnitude of the things that you and a lot of other people are going through. But my hope is that there was something said here today that could be used to help you and a lot of other people within the sound of my voice.
As Commander-in-Chief, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, righteous might will win through to absolute victory.